listening to Awake Radio, straight talk to the awake and aware.
Considered extreme and dangerous.
Shake and wake to the truth with Rick and A. Weekdays, Monday through Friday in the USA, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. GMT in the UK. Be on the lookout for the couple known as Rick and Annie, appearing at any time on multiple affiliate networks. Catch them in the app live or rebroadcast. See if you can catch them on awakeradio.us and awakeradio.co.uk or any of their known affiliates, spreading the truth to set you free. The couple known as Rick and Annie have been known to ride with Wild Bill Samsel's notorious Freedom Posse. Armed with the juice, considered extreme and dangerous. For more information on the suspects, visit shakeandwakeradio.com.
Deal with it.
You deal with it.
That's right. Just deal with it.
You live in the twilight. So, ladies and gentlemen, just stick down your pipe and smoke it.
How you see the world today might change. Change. Change.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it.
We have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
There's a need for a new world order.
They believe that we're going to the concentration camp and they're going to give our army to Russia and all that baloney.
The issue is, we live in an interdependent world. We have to cooperate with people. We're better off than we do. We're better off with NATO. We're better off with the United Nations.
You were both in Skull and Bone, the secret society. It's so secret we can't talk about it. What does that mean for America? For America.
Creating the kind of world order that I think all of us would like to see.
A world order that I think all of us would like to see. A world order that I think all of us would like to see. To see. To see.
To learn and lie, to be knowing about people, righty, guys and gals, get ready to shake and wake with Rick and Annie. Here we go yet again. Annie, you're excited. We got somebody really fun who's really great and doing some really admirable work out there across America. One of our favorite guests is with us today.
Yes, he is.
And your coffee IV is flowing just well.
Yeah, I went outside while you were sleeping, and I got the air thing,
every
compressor,
yeah.
And I took the line, and I went.
Oh, yeah, you blew the line out to clear it out.
Yeah, guess what? I almost fell off the deck. That thing's powerful.
So anyways, without further ado, let me just tell you, this man, if you listen to Shake and Wake and heard him before, you know exactly who he is. If not, he is working to try to basically get people to understand and do away with corporate fiction law in the United States and working with people overseas as well on the other side of the pond. And using, I say citizen juries, but you know, we want to get back to common law, natural law, basically. And this man is, you can go to the website. It's nationallibertyalliance.org. And I'm going to drop that in the chat room. So without further ado, I'll introduce Mr. John Durash. And we also have his friend sitting in, Gerard, along with us.
Hey, how you doing, Rick? How you doing?
Gerard, fix it for you.
Gerard's on the line with us. He's been working with me from the very beginning.
Gerard is John's bodyguard. He is a former Secret Service agent.
Stop. Don't give away my secrets.
We like fun on this show. You got to know that. All right, let's get serious now. So what time are we arresting the president this afternoon?
Oh, that's not going to come till tomorrow afternoon.
We can't get past the finance there in front of us.
You're getting Congress today, the president and the cabinet tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
I had to say that because we got one of the newer hosts on the network besides myself. I like that Matrix commercial you heard. I whipped that together. But this other guy, another couple, Devin and Shannon, he's quite talented. And when we go to the commercial break, he made a really clever commercial that'll put a smile on everybody's face. You'll know what I mean when you hear it. But that's why I made that little joke about when are we arresting the president this afternoon. But you'll hear it. So, John, for those who are here for the first time, you want to give a brief synopsis about
how this works
and, you know, how we're practicing an overlaid corporate fiction on top of the territories and that, you know, jurisdiction, and how it's a fraud being practiced against the people, basically using us all as human trafficking and to support the prison industrial complex. And I'll sit back and give you the mic.
All right, I'll try to make it as short as possible just to give a quick synopsis. You know, we have been studying the law now for about 4 or 5 years, and particularly common law, of course, and court procedure. And about a year ago, matter of fact, a year ago this month, I think it was April 22nd, last year is when we started this program where we're looking to bring grand juries into all 3,142 United States counties. So that's across the entire nation. And in that process, well, originally we started only in New York, but then we kind of got drafted into the rest of the country, the rest of the nation, shall I say. But anyway, since then, we have presence in all 50 states. We have quite a few thousand people involved with us, and we're establishing the administrative process within every county in order to bring back common law into our courts and bring back the common law grand jury and also the trial jury. The reason we started this thing was we found a case which was actually decided in 1992 by the United States Supreme Court, which is United States versus Williams. And Justice Anton Scalia wrote for the majority in that case, and he kind of revealed a lot of stuff that apparently he had been researching for quite some time. And so when we started reading that case, we started to discover the power of the grand jury, and that's when we shifted gears to focus in on this this part of the judicial process. And the duty of the grand jury is to fix and repair any and all wrongdoing, whether it be in a political or the judicial realm. And, of course, also, you know, other types of violations. But the beauty of it, you know, is the fact that this is the way we can get government by the consent of the people. The Declaration of Independence tells us that we have government by the consent of the people. And the question is, and I know that's been my, what I've been looking for many, many years, is how is it that the people get to govern themselves? And, of course, they'll tell you it's the jury, but it's the voting box and the ballot box. And the truth of the matter is that whole system is corrupted also. That's a top-down control by two major parties called the Republican and the Democratic parties. And it's a right-left punch. Both of them are bringing us more and more into slavery. And so the progressive movement is active in both parties. You know, one party raises taxes and the other party just goes out and writes out the check. So they're both raising the debt of the United States, and of course every state has to is paying for that. But in any event, the great thing is that the grand jury has the power and the ability to walk into any government office and do an investigation. They can't be refused. Of course, right now they're refusing us as much as they can because they don't recognize us yet. And that's where the battle is. But we get to walk into any government office and ask questions, and we don't even have to tell them what or who we're investigating. And if we find some problems within that office or with some people, we have the opportunity to give them a prescription. And this is the administrators of the grand jury, which is also the investigative body for the grand jury. And so they would then write a prescription for them to fix it and give them so much time to fix it. And if they didn't fix it, then they would take it to the full grand jury. We would then pull together and impanel the grand jury. And then the administrators would then give, or the investigative body would then give all of the information concerning the wrongdoing or the crime. And the grand jury would make decisions. They, too, have the opportunity of working out an arrangement and not necessarily sending it to the trial court. Because the idea thing is really to deal with the problem, not to fill the courts up with cases. And I would imagine at that point they would at least deal with them. But if not, then they're sent into the trial jury, and the administrators would then impanel the trial jury. And in both cases, both the grand jury and the trial jury, we have the opportunity to teach them the real law, not the fiction. And so we bring to them the principles by which all juries need to act by, and that is having a set and acting with a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And the two major maxims that we talk about all the time is that in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party, and the state cannot be that injured party. The other thing is that for every injury, there must be a remedy. So when you have an injured party, and if there's a fine or something that takes place, that the money would go to the injured party. We would have to discover. What we're trying to discover when we have a problem, whether it's the grand jury or the trial jury, they have to discover, you know, if there's an injured party, and if there was, how can we reinstate this person? How can we bring them back to their condition before they were injured? And so that's what they have to figure out, and then that's what they have to seek. And conclude with is to repair that injury. Juries or courts really should not be interested in putting people in jail. Of course, that is an option. Violent people, it's an option for, of course. But generally speaking, really, it's restoring the injured person. And that's what common law is all about, is to find restoration, to find a repair of the damages done by an individual to another. So that's kind of, and recently, well, about a month ago, we went international. I mean, we've got about seven countries sort of on the hook that wants to come into this process. We're looking to facilitate them, so we're looking for funds right now in order to make the necessary changes up on our website. Hopefully in the next week or two we'll be able to start that process and get these countries in. Some of them, we've got England, Ireland, Netherlands, Australia, Canada, and there's a couple others. I think there were seven of them altogether. So we'll try to facilitate those countries also. They're pretty much all but one are actual common law countries, so they have roots in the common law. There was one country out of Africa, I forget the name of it, they weren't, I don't believe that they ever were common law, but of course they're children of God too. They're on the same planet we are. They're our fellow man. And so they have the opportunity to take common law. Also, they don't need to have a background in common law in order to declare freedom under God ultimately. So that's kind of where we're at. We're in the courts right now. They're trying like heck to keep us out. Refused us to come into courts. They've returned papers on two occasions. We've sent them back in. Matter of fact, today we're sending papers back by sheriff this time. And then we documented the crime within our case, which we called an information, which is what a jury does or a grand jury does, is they write up an information and put it into the file, and it has to be responded to. There has to be a fix to that. So we did that, the clerks took the papers, but it was the judge who got his fingers on the papers and sent it back to us. We're pretty sure that that's the case. As far as we were able to trace it, it went to the judge's office. And the clerk would not respond, send papers back on their own, so the judge had to tell them to do that. And that particular judge, we filed charges against that person. We gave him a writ of error. He made decisions that he's not permitted by law to make. So we gave him a writ of error, and then we charged him with quite a few charges. Felony rescue was one of them, conspiracy and high treason, and a few other charges. And all the officers of that court, there was a lawyer in that court at the time when he committed that crime, and they worked together in unison, so that became the conspiracy between them. So they were both indicted, and we sent what's called the true bill in for that also. And again, we're not out to go after everybody as a witch hunt. All we want is the people's right to be able to come into their courts and watch to see what's going on and make sure it's going on right, and that's what the jury is all about. They're refusing us access to that, and so therefore anybody that gets in our way, we're going to indict them. We'll give them as many chances as possible to do the right thing, and we have. We've bent over backwards, given them letters and demands, and then a final command, and after that we let them know we're going to indict you then, we're going to bring them up before the grand jury, the full grand jury, to indict them, that is. And we did, and they did, and that's what we have right now. We have, five judges under indictment, six judges, I think, under indictment, two clerks under indictment, and we got five other judges that we brought charges against, and if they don't comply and obey the law, then there'll be five more judges. And these are the highest judges of New York State, the entire executive body of the administration of New York Supreme Court. So we're talking about the people that actually make things happen or supposed to make things happen. If there's any crime going on, they should know about it and they should be fixing it, but they're not interested in that. So those are the people we will indict, and we've said it 1,000 times. Once we get in, we have no intentions on going on an indictment rampage, so to speak. We're not on a witch hunt. Whatever they've done in the past that's fine. We're not going to chase that. We're interested in what they do right now and in the future. We want to save the republic. Of course, injured parties eventually will start coming to us, and if they bring in their complaints and they've been injured, and whoever they injured them, we're going to have to deal with it and repair that wrongdoing. So, their skeletons in their closets will eventually catch up with them. But the truth of the matter is if we did indict all the criminals, and I've mentioned this many, many times, if we did indict all the criminals, Albany, and here in New York, I'm in New York, Albany would be a ghost town, and so would Washington, D.C. There'd be no one left because they're all complicit. They're all involved in this game. Some of them not necessarily by choice, and of course, you may find a few, like a Ron Paul or someone that has been really working hard to expose this stuff and do whatever they can do. So we have to keep an eye on that kind of thing, that those people don't get injured. But again, you know, we just want our country back. And then we want to be left alone. And that's, I guess, it in a nutshell.
Well, wow. That was awesome, except the Ron Paul part, because we pretty much know that he's just a gauge, and there's enough stuff floating around out there with him giving the Freemason handshake, you know.
Right, I don't get involved in those kind of conversations, yeah. So it's hard for me to tell. Look, I'll tell you, it's very difficult to tell who the enemy is sometimes. And,
right,
You know, and you got to, you know, take it the best you can. We try not to make any alliances with any group, because we're not really a group, we're the people, and doing some serious business of getting the administration together. We don't want any political connections. We don't want any, you know, partnerships or anything of that nature, because we have to stay as pure as possible.
Gerard.
Yes.
Could you mute up, because there's noise coming through.
Okay.
Oh, unless you wanted to say something. You have to lower your volume on your mic or something, because when you unmuted, it went shh.
How about now? No?
Yeah, it's still, we're still hearing sound. So just mute up unless you wanted to say something.
Right, okay. Very good.
All right. There we go. So what's been the recent things that... I know the last time we spoke and had you on the show, you were telling us that, well, pretty much every time that I get together to talk with you, you have like five or six people in a Skype call, and you're advising all of these people. And what would you call yourself, an organizer, pretty much?
I look at myself as one of the people, and there are a lot of very intelligent people that are organizing and also coordinating different groups. I mean, we've got a lot of great leaders that have great knowledge and understanding of what's going on, and they're teaching. But I'm just one of the people. I'm organizing and I'm coordinating and we're facilitating, and I'm just one of quite a few people involved in putting this thing together. I'm just happen to be one with the biggest mouth, I guess. And like I said, there are people. We have people in out in California, very involved and very intelligent, and are ready to do the exact same thing we're doing here in New York. And we have people in Florida. You know, we're now up to 10 states fully constituted. I don't recall if we had many or any last time we spoke, but New York has all 62 counties constituted with the administrative process in motion. In every county here, getting ready, and of course we're in the courts trying to take things back, and we're putting the pressure on, and believe me, the pressure is on. The phones are ringing off the hook all over New York right now, we know that, because they don't know what to do with us, and we're constantly filing more papers into our court. I don't want to call it a court case. What we did is we took on an index number, and we also filed what's called an RJI, which is a request for judicial intervention. And so we got the index number and we got the RJI, and we filed for a date in court in order to come in and work as a grand jury under, you know, from within the courthouse under the auspices of justice. So since they wouldn't give us access, we paid $305 to get access. And they're trying like heck to keep us out. And now, you know, we couldn't get any papers filed where it would stick. Every place we went, they'd send it back. They broke the law, and we kept indicting. And that's why we have so many judges under indictment and clerks. We then realize, well, hey, let's just open a court case. Now it's filed in the courts, and they can't take it out. So we've got all our indictments filed in the court case that we opened up. And again, it's just we come together. We're coming together as the grand jury in that courtroom with a judge. For his purpose, he's really a magistrate. We'll put the pen in his hand, and we're going to expect that he's going to sign the papers, the arrest warrants, and everything necessary, because now it's in the file. Now he's got to do it. Now, of course, I think they're going to continue to break the law, and the pressure is going to mount, and eventually someone will break, or there's some other things we have planned, but we don't want to talk about them yet. But right now, we're just putting the pressure on the New York Supreme Court. And the tipping point of this whole thing is really people. We need people. People should go out to nationallibertyalliance.org. They should read our front page and watch the video on the front page. The video is about 30, 35 minutes, 40 minutes long. It'll take 5 minutes to read the page. So give us an hour, and we promise you that you will be pretty impressed by what we have discovered. And most people, well, just about everybody that's in the movement that looks at our front page and watches the video realizes there's something here, and finally we have something we can do and something that will give the people power and authority. And so that's what people need to do. Get out there, read the page, and see who and what we are. You'll see that just on our front page. And then register. Register as a jurist. No matter what, even if you don't want to get too much too involved or you don't have the time, register as a jurist. And just pay attention. Maybe come to our Monday night meetings. We have a Monday night meeting at 9 p.m. To midnight Eastern Standard Time every Monday. Where we, the first hour, we have usually talk about what's going on and try to teach something and updates.
What he means is you can come to the meeting via the website. Is that you, John, or is that Gerard?
Where?
I heard like something slamming or.
Oh, I picked up a drink. I have a drink, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Mike is very sensitive.
All right. There we go. We had a question from the chat room when we started the Shake and Wake program about a year ago. We were on Revolution Radio at that time, and we had a regular guest every Monday, Tammy Pepperman, who's does a lot with common law and sovereign law. And this guy Olive's a friend of ours, and he's studying all types of stuff under sovereign law. And his question was, you can look in the chat below the Skype. Olive asks, ask John if he does quiet title or does he have a quiet title? If not, what kind of paperwork does he has to sovereign land rights?
Yeah, we do have information. We've been studying some of that stuff, and we've helped a few people privately, but we don't announce that stuff on our website. We don't get too much into the conversation for numerous reasons. It makes us a target, and the more things you're doing, the more potential targets you are, and they may not be able to get you on this, to get you on that. Some of this stuff is pretty dangerous to mess around with. If you don't know what you're doing, you can get yourself in trouble. But our focus and our time, there's not enough time in the day to do what I am doing, so I don't get into that too much. But we're aware of it, and we advise people time to time.
You're basically dealing with criminal cases or with cases where people are just being dragged through the system for nonsense.
Right. You know, I get a call sometimes from somebody who maybe they lost their children, and I try to help them get their children back, things of that nature, which I don't have the time, but when those kind of cases come up, I do end up usually helping as best I can.
I have heard you say in the group calls that you'll send people the paperwork or whatever.
Right.
Starting a case, and what would you call the paperwork that you send them to file?
Action at law, and we help people file papers. Not so much anymore because we're just so busy, we can't do it anymore. Eventually, from time to time I still do, of course, but if someone has some basic knowledge and they need some assistance, and I can speak with them and give them a few examples and they can get off on their own, then that's good. But to spend a lot of time building the cases up, I just don't have that anymore. And we have to stay on point with saving the Republic. But what we do is we file what's in a court called Court of Record. And it's very simple. We don't get too involved in all the language and stuff. We go right for the jugular vein, so to speak, and we come in. And we declare we speak about our standing and our jurisdiction. We call ourselves one of the people. That's our standing. And in this court of record, that's our jurisdiction. Sue or charge or whatever it is we're doing. And then we tell our story and we do our affidavit and so on and so forth. And they will always try to bring us over into the Chancery Court. When you have a judge, I've looked in history, and the only place you see judges is in chancery courts. And chancery courts are equity courts, and that's what they call these courts, is equity courts. And so therefore they're running a chancery court, and the judge is a chancellor. And they also call him a judge or a chancellor. And the problem with that is that the judge has the authority to make the law up as he goes. And that's what they're doing, and people are seeing that. They're complaining, hey, well, we're not getting our rights that are, you know, protected under the Constitution. He's breaking the law. Yeah, he is. He's doing it because he's got a chancellor court going. And so we make that distinction because the United States Constitution requires only common law courts on the land. There are other courts, but that's when you're dealing with different issues, the UCC and the federal courts. And there are some other courts out there. But generally speaking, the county court, which is the Supreme Court usually, is the court of the people. And that is to be under common law. Nothing else, common law. If you've got contracts, it's contract court, yeah, but it's under common law. Criminal situation, still under common law. And they've robbed us of that. And so when you walk into a courtroom, the very first order really needs to be, what jurisdiction am I in? I know what jurisdiction I opened this court with, and I know I'm the sovereign of the court, and I know that I've told you my standing, and I've told you my jurisdiction, and the other side, which is brain dead and don't understand those simple words, they think a court of record is a court that keeps a record, and that's not the interpretation of a court of record. But anyway, they accept, you know, ignorance. They accept it out of ignorance, so they haven't argued. So it's up to the judge to tell us what court he's ruling in, because when we start to hear these statutes come up and all these rules and regulations, we start to realize, wait a second, we left the jurisdiction of common law. Common law, there is no codes. Although we'll use codes, because codes are written to control the bureaucrats, the elected individuals, the appointed individuals, and so on. So we'll use the codes to keep them in their box, because that's what it's for. And Congress was given that power by the people. You can read about it in the Constitution. But generally speaking, there are no codes to control the people. So once they start talking about these codes and statutes and rules, we object and say, wait a second, what jurisdiction is it you think we're in? Because we know we started this off. We called for the common law. And they won't answer that question. So you may have to ask it two or three times as you're arguing your points. I never leave the jurisdiction anymore, because you can win every case on jurisdiction. And at some point, then you just make note in the court record. Let the record show that the judge is remaining silent. He has a duty to speak, and silence is considered a fraud. And therefore, there's fraud in the court, unless the judge tells us what jurisdiction we're in. Then you don't have to talk no more, because whatever goes on, you've objected to it all. So you can continue to object, walk out of the court, and whatever decisions or damages that individual did up on that bench, you can write a writ of error. And in that writ of error, you can make the corrections.
John, if you'd like to take that call, we could just go to a quick break, but it's up to you.
Yeah, we'll go for a quick break, and I'll take this call.
Let me say something while he's taking that call.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to explain. People don't understand thoroughly the site and what our function is. Basically, we are a resource center and sort of a clearinghouse for those things that we have vetted and we have done and we've had some success with. Now, if you go, our site is a teaching site. Everything there's everything on the site that you would need to know in order to do one of those cases and learn it. We have the common law. We also have a procedural course that's like a jurisdictionary course that teaches you, you know, how the procedure of courts, which is something that we fell down on very early when we went in, and we had to learn it because they kick you out on procedure right away. And really, they're supposed to help the people, but they don't. They use that as a way of getting the first way of getting the people out is finding something wrong with their paper, and instead of letting you correct it, they throw you out. So it's very important to learn the procedures, and that course is there. And it's all given away for free. I mean, that course, the similar courses to that, they're worth about $1,000. You just go in and download it, and it's very plug and play. John has written it so that, you know, he tells you put it in a 2-inch binder, put these tabs, and You take that folder into court with you in the beginning, and you can flip through some of the resources in there that, you know, when you need a reminder, you know. And like he says, most of the stuff you do is going to be on paper. You certainly don't want to be talking in court very much when you're not savvy, because you can get yourself in, you know, it's going on the record. And you know, the higher the court is, the more savvy these judges are dragging you through different jurisdictions, you know, and they will try to trick you into it. So until you become thoroughly familiar with what you're doing, we don't recommend you argue anything in court. You do it all on paper, because you can always get help. And listen, you're not under that pressure. You know, I mean, sometimes it does become necessary to argue in court, but generally speaking, like John says, you can just object and then write the paper later, and don't let them bully you into anything. But the site is a great resource. We have constitutional courses. We have common law, hours and hours and hours of stuff. We have Lysander Spooner. If you go through that site and you really, I mean, you could stay in there for a long, long time, but when you get out, it's like a college education in common law and the law. And so, you know, these judges, they don't want people helping you in court. That's another thing that we kind of fight them on, because you are allowed an advocate, but that's an uphill battle. So generally speaking, you know, if we help somebody in court, they have to be savvy enough to speak for themselves, because, you know, right away you're going to fight with the judge on whether or not you can be their advocate and speak. You should be able to whisper in their ear, but a lot of times they don't like that either, and they're giving you trouble, and, you know, that's a hard battle, and it's a hard way to fight a court case. So, really, you should be writing the papers, and you shouldn't be doing a lot of this stuff until you become, you know, a little bit, you know, you start out as a white belt, and you end up as a black belt. It's like anything else. You know, you're playing court jujitsu here, you know? So, that's basically, and we don't put anything in there that we haven't experienced, you know, that we don't know about. You know, we try to keep all the dangerous stuff out, and, you know, we try to keep it clean and not give them something to hang their hats on, you know what I mean? So, and the other thing is, you know, in this battle we've been, one of the first thing they told us, they said, you got to take this to a federal court. You can't do this here. This needs to go to a federal court. Well, they're in such a hurry to push us to a federal court, and they got to be careful what they're asking for. They don't understand that the federal court probably understands the law more than them. I know they do. Those judges up there do. And ultimately, if we end up in a federal court, the repercussions when we prevail will be worse for them than if we took care of it in the state court. Now, one of the reasons we don't run right to a federal court is the federal courts don't like this stuff either. this is not easy stuff for them. I mean, we rest in Supreme Court rulings all the time. I mean, it's very – how are they going to deny us? Because we – you know, our cases are full of their rulings. What are they going to do, go back on their rulings? But what happens is if you don't exhaust all your resources in the lower court, the federal court will send you back down there. They'll say, well, you haven't completely exhausted your remedy yet. You know, you haven't tried everything, so what are you doing wasting our time? So we start on the lower court, and we try to exhaust all our remedies and try not to go up to the federal court if we don't have to, you know what I mean? And really, as it should be, you know, the state should take care of the state stuff, you know? But, again, when there's constitutional violations, that's the function of the federal, to bring the lower court back into where it needs to be, to, you know, as per our contract under the Constitution. And that's what's not happening. So, and a lot of times people don't trust the federal court, and I know that there's some rulings up there, and, you know, there's certain very twisted judges that make bad rulings, but most of the time, because there has to be a consistency in their ruling, when you see a ruling that came out of the federal court that looks bad and you don't understand and you think the judges are corrupt and all that, most of the time it's because the judge understands jurisdiction and the plaintiff or the defendant, for that matter, did not. And that decision was made on the jurisdiction that the person allowed them to take him in, and that's what the judge is ruling on. And it's and we go, oh, that's terrible. Well, the judge is not going to go into the Constitution if you come in equity in something that you've volunteered into or contracted into, I should say. And they're not going to tell you that, you know. I mean, like, for instance, they tell people, you don't have standing. You don't have standing. Well, why don't you have standing? This, you don't have standing because you haven't proved that you have standing. I mean, on one of the cases that Bob Schultz did from We the People was up in the federal court, and they used a Supreme Court case that the New York State public employees filed a redress of grievance with the state, and it went all the way up to the federal court. And the federal court ruled that the employees don't have the right to redress of grievances of the state because they're public employees. And, you know, you're an employee, so guess what? Quit if you don't like it. You know, it's their policies. Well, when they denied his petition, they quoted that particular case saying that you're a public employee. And, you know, in the appellate court, there's three judges. And in order to move to the Court of Appeals, you have to have at least one ascending opinion. You can't have, three dissenting opinions because then you're dead in the water. One judge has to be convinced that there's some merit to your case. Well, at the end of that case, the two judges quoted that case that said you're a public employee, you don't have the right. That we're basing it on the merits of that case, whatever they were. And the third judge says, well, clearly Mr. Schultz is not a public employee. And she went on to explain some stuff. But the coup d'etat was she filed it as a dissenting opinion along with hers. So I believe, in my itty-bitty little mind, that what she was doing is she was sending him a message without getting her neck in a noose, telling him, look, you don't think you're a public employee, but you're sure acting like one. And when you're filing your papers, you know, we're seeing you as that. That's a message. You know what I mean? So I believe that was a very powerful message, and I believe it was the only way she could say it without getting herself in a ringer. You know what I mean?
Well, for the most part, they don't have the whole thing's a sham because they don't have jurisdiction.
No, and but if you don't preserve your jurisdiction and the other party brings you in equity and the judge sees you quoting these equity things, listen, you can win in equity. You can use their law against them. You know what I mean? But it gives them a whole lot more leeway to screw with you when you're messing with their laws because they dance around that those statutes, you then make your head swim.
And there's also contempt. If they don't like you, they can just say, you know, you're not answering my question. I'm holding this guy in contempt of court.
Yeah, that's scary, too, because at that point there, then the next thing you know, they're locking you up. And the only remedy for that, again, is that you don't go in there without a whole force of people watching, without a whole bunch of publicity, because that's your only safety. And that's sort of what we worry about, that, you know, we need people to keep paying attention, to keep showing up, to show them that this is not just one or two people. This is a popular movement that's not going to go away. And you know, if you take one or two of us and try to pin us to the wall, that all you're going to do is create a movement, you know. Look, Jesus Christ was more popular dead than he was alive now, wasn't he?
Oh, for sure.
Right.
And it only took like 12 people and him to start that ball rolling. So
well, and hopefully he's listening to us, and we can,
oh for sure he is everything
by that example, right? So
right.
You know, and we don't have any one person that's in control of this. You know what I mean? Like I said, you know, we're kind of like a clearinghouse. We gather information, we put it out, we collaborate all over the country. And we hone each other, steel sharpens steel. And what we're doing is we're sharpening people. We're educating the sheriffs. We're sending things out to the oath takers, all the oath takers. And, you know, a lot of them can't understand it because they can't get past reading. You know, quite frankly, if you compare them to the 1800s, they have a third grade reading comprehension. But look, if you get 10% or even 3% of all the oath takers to read that stuff and understand it, guess what? You got a movement. You will prevail. It doesn't take the majority. It just takes a tireless minority lighting brush fires, and that's what we're doing.
Yes. The jurisdiction issue, like at the very beginning of a case, there's been a lot of talk about, I've heard Aladask also come right out and say, you know, from the get-go in a case when you go up before them, if you're asking as to why they believe they have jurisdiction, if the judge doesn't want to answer that question, or put it this way, isn't the real fear here that if enough people start setting precedents, then everybody will be copying what they're doing? So they, in a lot of these cases, they'll kick you loose. They'll kick the person loose if it's not a serious charge because they don't want it going down in court record.
Yeah, this is the key to that. You know, we made this mistake for quite some time. We couldn't figure it out. You know, we would talk with the judge and tell him he has to prove jurisdiction. We gave him the option for him to answer. And when they did answer, you know, my robes give me the authority, or, you know, this code gives me the authority. So they give you bad answers anyway. The key to this whole thing is not to ask them a question that they can answer to begin with, and don't give them a chance to make a decision. They don't have a decision to decide whether they have jurisdiction or not. You have to tell them that they don't have jurisdiction. And you could do it, you know, again, what I do at this point in time, we go into the courts, and the bottom line, first order of business is jurisdiction. The court moves nowhere without knowing jurisdiction. Because if you don't know the jurisdiction, you know, you can't go to Chancery Court and make an argument under the Constitution. So I have to know the jurisdiction. So I'm in a common law court, so this is the jurisdiction I chose. So you have to put the judge on the line here. You got to put his flesh on the line. You got to let him know, look it. This is a common law jurisdiction. This is the court that we opened up, common law. We're proceeding according to common law. What say you? Do you confirm that? You got to put him to a point and an answer for him. Either he's going to answer and tell you the truth, which is doubtful, okay? He's going to avoid the answer. He's going to say, oh, okay, enough of that. Let's move on. Mr. Jones, what do you have to say here?
Well, then you object
to the whole thing.
Right.
You object, but the key is this, is putting it on the record that he refuses to speak to say the jurisdiction. He has a duty to speak. That's the law.
Right.
He has a duty to speak. And since he doesn't speak and he remains silent, it's fraud on the court. And now you've got the answer.
You've also thrown a scare into him. Because when some punk in court for driving without a license or something questions him on the court's standing of having jurisdiction,
right,
he's automatically, the little hamster's running on the wheel going, oh boy, this guy knows something.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
probably,
exactly why we know that all these
probably
judges
pause
know.
And start looking around the courtroom and have to think, okay, next move. You know, you've just moved your pawn up on the chessboard, and now he
right.
knows he's playing with somebody who's maybe played this before or has a really good counsel. And counsel
mm-hmm.
only means somebody advising you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, and again, you know, I perplexed for a while. I was wondering, do the judges know? Do they not know? Back and forth, back and forth. And experience has taught me they absolutely know. And I'll tell you why. Because whenever you walk into court and you challenge the jurisdiction, they go through all these, you know, they get all twisted up in themselves, and they can't respond, that they don't answer. Well, they're hiding something. They know. So I know now that they know. It's become obvious.
Olive wants to know, do you ever show up in court willfully? Yeah, well, I can answer that, and he'll answer also. Yes, he does. But if you don't have to, like in the case of a ticket or a summons, if you can file papers to them and you don't have to show up in the court, in other words, if they'll if they don't want to bring you in because you got some knowledge and they are afraid of you, then that's the best way to go. If you don't have to step into the courtroom, that's much better than to show up in court. And, you
that's
know,
right.
When you're physically in the court, now you got bailiffs standing around you.
Yeah, if you get a ticket, if you get a ticket and you have the opportunity to answer by mail, you absolutely should, but you don't answer that ticket. You attach the ticket, and make sure you get a copy of that for your records. You attach the ticket to your papers, and your papers are not going to plead in any way, shape, or form. You open up a court of record right there. Remember, a court of record could be opened up in any courtroom. Anybody that claims to have authority, you open the court, you're opening your court right on top of their court. So you send your paperwork in. I don't ask him if he's got jurisdiction or put him in any way where he makes any decision. I don't expect any judge to make any decision in any courtroom that I'm in. I don't want him. He's not allowed to. And, of course, they do. You got to write writs of error, and you got to push him back. But the bottom line is this, is when you get into that courtroom, when you respond with your paperwork, you're telling the judge that he doesn't have jurisdiction, and the only thing he could do is dismiss this immediately. So that's kind of the paperwork. It's only about 3 or 4 pages that I would write with any case in that case. Now, if you got to go to court, if they're requiring you to appear, you better appear, even though you don't have to appear. Under law, you don't have to appear, but these guys are out of control, and there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. And they got the gun, so they're going to come out and get you. So you might as well go. So if I appear in a courtroom, the first order of business when I talk with these people is to let them know that my court is now open and in session, and I am appearing and speaking to you from my court. And my court is here only in special appearance. And that's it. And then I make the point that, A, you don't have a jurisdiction. You don't have subject matter jurisdiction because there's no sworn affidavit by an injured party. You don't have personam jurisdiction because this is a fraudulent court operating under fiction and not under the common law. So you have no other choice but to just to dismiss this case immediately. And if you refuse it, you know, at some point you go back, you'll see he's not going to dismiss it. You give him the warning, you get grace from me one time. That's it. I'll give you grace when I walk out this door. If I'm walking out this door with a date, I'm not coming back on that date because you're going to be coming over down the street to the Supreme Court because you're going to have a date from me. And this will squash everything here and we'll take it over there. And so you have to let them know that you're going to create and put upon them collateral damage. The Supreme Court has ruled. The Constitution is clear. And the lower courts are susceptible to collateral damage from a higher court. We don't have to appeal. There is no appeal in the high court.
Does that usually work? In other words, listen, so they give you a date, right? Like, mm-hmm. Hypothetically, I say that I'm questioning the matter of whether the court has jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And,
no, I'm not questioning it. You're telling them they don't.
Right,
that's
okay.
What you gotta do.
I don't feel this court has jurisdiction.
Nope, you do not have jurisdiction, you tell them. That's what you tell
them. All right, and that you won't be returning to this court. If this matter is pursued, I will be taking this to, what do you call it, the Supreme Court?
Supreme Court, yes. And then, of course, if you're in the Supreme Court, then you're going to sue right there. You do a fraud on a case. That's what you sue them for. Okay. Look at it. As soon as you walk into, just think about this. Okay, you're walking into a court. You opened, or you're being brought into that court. If you're being brought into that court, you're being kidnapped ultimately because they're requiring you to show up. So once you get to that court, you let them know that they're acting way beyond their authority. They don't have authority to do this without my consent, and I give no consent. But even that's a fraudulent game too.
You still call it kidnapping, even though you appeared willfully? In other words, you walked
in
the
door? Oh, absolutely, because you couldn't go to the beach at that time, could you?
No, because if you did, they would,
so you were kidnapped. It's constructive kidnapping. You know, the bottom line is they're requiring your presence, and if you don't show up, they're going to physically come out and get you.
Wow,
so you're
right.
Under duress and under the control of the court. You've been kidnapped by the court.
That's beautiful. So if they've arrested you for a nonviolent thing, then
it's kidnapped too.
Right. Then
because you see, it's a corporation. It's a corporate court. They have no authority over you. No corporation has authority over people.
Right. Oh, I
so it's a fraud. It's a fiction.
Yeah. Right.
Everybody believes it. The emperor has no clothes, but nobody recognizes he's naked. Okay? So we're all complying to a fiction. When people wake up and realize the fiction, it goes away, doesn't it? Because nobody's going to give it any credibility.
Yes.
That's what we're about. We're trying to educate the people. Education. Look at Jefferson was very, very clear about this. And I bring this quote up often. If people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. You cannot remain ignorant and have liberty. You can't have it. It's an oxymoron to think you can have one without the other. You must have them both. You must have the knowledge of your liberty. So you can't be ignorant. And that's why what we're teaching on our website is for everything people need to know to be free. And our children should learn this by the time they come out of eighth grade. They should be able to go out and represent themselves in a court, defend themselves in a court if they had to, or file a court case. They should have that knowledge. It's not that difficult. It seems difficult in the beginning because it's like a foreign language. You know, people speak in terms and say things, and they're not used to hearing, and they don't know the terms, and they're trying to remember all these things. But once you get past it and get into the language a little bit and start to get comfortable by just being there through osmosis, all of a sudden it becomes very simple. It is a very simple thing. Common law is common sense and principles. That's all it is, common sense and principles. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. You know, Lysander Spooner, it's a course we give up on the website. Audio.
I love the book. There's an audio out there floating around on YouTube, if nobody's ever heard it before. Lysander Spooner, The Constitution of No Authority, where he constantly refers to them as murderers and thieves, a gang of murderers and thieves.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, we have that up on the website in audio, so you can listen to the MP3s, put it on your MP3 player. And we have it up there in written form, so you can go back and cut and paste and use a lot of these different sections of it in your court cases and stuff, or letters or whatever it is you're doing, and for your own education. But the Lysander Spooner makes it crystal clear the authority and the power of the court. I forget exactly where I was going to go with this, but anyway, I guess I'll end with that until I remember.
All right, well, we'll go to a quick break, and this commercial is for you, John, and the song. We got a couple of fun John Cougar songs today. When the Walls Come Crumbling Down.
Okay, we're heading out to Jericho.
And then the commercial that you're going to hear is a new commercial made by my good buddy Devin. Devin and Shannon, his wife, do a show here. And, man, I can't wait. I can get a visual when I heard this commercial. What a happy day that would be. But go ahead, Annie. Here we go. You're listening to Shake and Wake with Rick and Annie. Our guest today is John DeRash from NationalLibertyAlliance.org on Awake Radio. We'll be right back.
I'm not Listening to awakeradio.co.uk, awakeradio.us, and shazizradio.com. Awake Radio, straight talk for the awake and the aware.
Welcome back to Shake and Wake with Rick and Annie on Awake Radio.
Welcome back. Our guest today is John DeRash from NationalLibertyAlliance.org. And he's talking about binding the judges and the courts from practicing fake, false, corporate fiction law and establishing your sovereign, God-given rights to be heard in a court of common / natural law so that you're not dragged around to raise money or your body is being used as a money-making tool of these kangaroo courts, basically. By the way, I'd like to give everybody the number. If anybody would like to call in with a question for John, the number here is 386-643-4064. That's 386-643-4064. And if you don't have a pen or a pencil, I'll mention it again in a couple of minutes. Go get one. I know when I'm listening to a radio show and somebody's giving the number, I don't got a pen or a pencil nearby, and I'm like trying to remember to scratch it down. usually I got like a whole bunch of pens here, and when I try to grab one and write, half of them don't work.
I ought
to throw them in the fire pit. But, yeah, man, I really got to say, John, the work that you're doing is really phenomenal. Between the bogus money system that's about to collapse and this corporate fiction law being practiced on all of us, the House of Cards is about ready to fall, isn't it?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. You know, I hear July, and that could be the case. I don't know that anybody's got a particular date. They've made quite a few dates that we've become aware that we think they, but they weren't ready. I think they're getting to the point where they realize that even if they're not ready, they need to move forward, and I believe that's going to be this year. That's why we have to move as quick as possible to do what needs to be done. You know, we're still 3-4 months away from getting the whole nation on board. If we had the whole nation on board, I mean, that in itself would be just so hugely powerful. And again, we do have a lot of states on board, of course, and I started reading them. I don't know if I went through all the states. Maybe I can make those points right now. New York State, which is the state I'm in, we have 62 counties, and we have brought the process into every single county here in New York. So it's working and moving in New York. And let me name the other states that we're at: Florida, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Arizona, Massachusetts, Maryland, Maine. And we expect Pennsylvania in the next 2 weeks to be completed. And there was another state, I think it was Oregon. Oregon is going to be ready in the next 3 weeks or so. And we have some other states we haven't heard from yet, but we think we're ready to go. So that's going to happen very, very soon. So we have, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have 12 to 15 states completed, ready to go. I mean, they're in the process. Now it's to go through what New York is going through, which is to try to get into the doors. And we kind of created a process for doing that. It's not that we created it. Actually, we were using common law procedures and processes, and we're doing something kind of unique. The main thing we're doing a little unique is the fact that we're paying $305 to get into the court. And we're going to want our money back when we're done with that anyway. But in any event, this brings the records into the court. They can't pull it out, and it should put some fear down their spine. So we got to get this going. We got to get every county activated and action going. We need as many people as possible. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Again, read the front page, watch the video, and register. If you want to get involved and help to organize, you click the organizer button, and your name and number will appear on an organizer's page on county organizers. And when people have questions or comments or questions about what's going on or wants to get active, everybody's got each other's number out there for the people that are active. Of course, if you don't want your number to appear, you just don't check the box county organizer. We do have people that are active that are not county organizers.
The other thing is on your site, you also have links to you do a weekly show, right, on that site?
Yeah, every Monday from 9 to 12. Right now we have a live chat room open. It's open all the time, so people use it from time to time. But on Monday nights from 9 to 12, people come onto the chat room, and they're talking in the text chat. And to hear us, you have to come in or by phone. If you have the computer phone, you use that, whatever. But we're working on the stream. We're working on streaming. Hopefully in the next few weeks we'll be streaming live right on the same page. So at 9 o'clock the call will begin and streaming will start. And people will be able to hear a lot of people come just to listen. And then, of course, if they have questions, they can make the phone call in, which we have the number on the page. We do record each program, so it's 3 hours. You can download it usually the next morning. It's up usually that night of the call or the next day. But you can download it and listen if you missed it or if you're only for part of it. We do have a lot of people that listen through the recording for one reason or another. That's pretty much it. We try to keep people informed, but we got to stay active. We got to communicate. We have to learn. And I want to go back to Jefferson. If people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. So we have to become re-educated. And we give a complete education, as Gerard was saying. We give a college beyond a college education. We give a real education. Let's put it that way. We give an education. You come and click on our courts. You go to our court and essay tab, and the drop-down box is there. We have American history lectures. We have a lot of great books, all the great books we have up there. Hume, Newton, Spinoza, Locke, Hobbes. Well, we have two constitutional classes. We have a trial by jury. We have a 5,000-year leap. All audio. This is all audio and video stuff. And we have five people working right now, creating an actual quiz for each section, five questions per video, per audio, per half hour. And then once you get asked those questions, you get 3 out of 5 right, then you'll get credit for that part of the course. And so we're trying to set up a course for people who are going to become the administrators. We want them to prove to themselves and to others that they had spent time to educate themselves to become an administrator for their county, for the common law grand jury, and of course the trial jury, and so we have that. We're preparing that course now, and that'll make them eligible for those positions. those positions. You know, people have those positions right now, but they create the puppet grand juries. It's in the court or in the prosecutor's office. We're going to take that over, and we'll be budgeted for that. And people will receive salaries for those positions at some point in time once we're into the courts. But we're going to expect people to be educated or be in the process of being educated in order to have those positions. And if whoever is more highly educated and through the process, if there are five people coming for four positions, then the four people who are really motivated and doing the work, they're the ones that will get those positions first. And some counties we will need five or six or seven people. You know, New York City, you go down to the Bronx or to Brooklyn, Queens, whatever. You know, the high population, so there's a lot more work down there. So we might need 10 or 15 administrators in those particular New York City counties. So we really, you know, it's an important, if we're not educated, we're not going to be able to do this. And again, this is not rocket science. This is really logic and principles. And once you get it, it'll click on you and you'll see how easy it is. But, you know, we need to know history. Those who forget history or don't learn history are destined to repeat it. That's a fact. That's why we're here now. We're going through the revolution again.
What people don't realize is they've been tricked into consenting into being a piece of property of this corporation.
Exactly. But the interesting thing, you see,
They've been tricked into consenting, like from the day they're born, that they issue you a certificate of live birth with your name in capital letters, and you know, and if you know who you are and can protest who you are, I even heard, even in IRS cases, some people think that because you might have filed before in the past or whatever, that, you know, you already consented, but you can reverse your consent at any time.
Well, absolutely.
Correct?
But absolutely. The moment you discover that you're a human being freed by God with certain unalienable rights, at that moment you stand on that, you take hold of it, you got it. Look, the fraud is a fraud is a fraud is a fraud, no matter what you do. And I've come to realize, and people need to put this into their brains, the fact that they're saying, well, because you didn't consent, we got you. Well, that in itself is a fraud. The whole thing is a fraud. The whole court system is a fraud. And that's what people have to realize. You know, winning in court is a mindset. You don't really need much knowledge to win in court. You just need the mindset. You need some strategy, and the strategy, again, is very simple, jurisdiction, and they don't have it. They don't have my consent, and they don't have my jurisdiction.
Like a four or five-year-old learning ABCs, once you learn the basic information and what your rights are and what it is that you would need to say, it's kind of like knowing the words to a song by heart. I mean, some of the people in this movement that I've spoken with or had on the show or listened to on other shows, like Christopher of the Fleming family, as he goes by, it could become second nature, so that when somebody calls your name and you step up, well, I mean, if you get to that point where you, you know, you're in the court physically, let's say they arrested you last night and they bring you in. This guy rattles this stuff off like the way a kid who just learned his ABCs. In other words, like Christopher Fleming, step forward. ABC, ABCDEFGHIJKLMNOP. And then I ask another question, you know, QRSTUV.
You got to be able to rattle it off. But you know what? To get all that is really simple. I promise you, if you just listen to the audios and watch the videos over and over again, you know, for me, it was like three times. I listened to the common law lectures. There's four of them we have up online. I listened to them four times. By the time I got to the fourth time, I was like mastering this stuff, and I was starting to take notes to get specific so I can write it down and be very specific if I were in a courtroom with a certain thing. Remember, you're going to make notes. You make notes, and you can carry it into a courtroom. You bring your papers. Watch any case. You'll see that they have plenty of papers before them, and they're flipping pages, and they're reading, and they're responding, you know?
Hey,
so
right,
the key is
right,
just really right, getting exposed.
Write
I
it
promise.
In the, write it in the palm of your hand or on each one of your arms, so that way if the judge doesn't understand, you can put both of your arms up like Jesus Christ, and he can read it right off your arm. Put sentence one on your right arm and sentence one on your left so it can read it left to right, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you have jurisdiction over me?
Yeah.
I will be pursuing
this
matter. I will be pursuing this matter, seeking, what would the words be? Seeking compensation. Is that what you'd call it? Compensation?
Well, remedy. You want
seeking
remedy.
Seeking remedy in the Supreme Court.
Right. Well, look, in my court cases, this is something I'm just starting. You know, these people, they don't obey. And so what I do is I have three lines that every case, it may not fit on the first page, but definitely fit on the second page because, you know, your first page has to say very specific things. And I do a lot of footnotes, so... You know, they want to know the meaning of the word is, I give it to them on the bottom in the footnotes. Yeah, but what I do is a 20 font. Actually, it's a 19.5 font to make it work on a one-inch border around it. And this is what it says. It's three lines. And so I did it in large font so the judge doesn't have to put his glasses on to read it. It says, the Constitution and the laws of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. And that's the U.S. Constitution, Article 6, Clause 2. It's called the Supremacy Clause. And now it's not the entire part, but it's the most important part of that particular small paragraph. Let me read it again. The Constitution and the laws of the United States, that's the U.S. codes, you know, the ones that we use, U.S. 1842 and so on, to use to be on their bad behavior for kidnapping and so on. The Constitution and the laws of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Now, I can't tell you how many times I've heard from judges and from lawyers, well, that's federal stuff, that's federal laws, we got state laws, we got state codes. No, you have to obey. So I want to make it clear so they see that right in the beginning. You know, the other thing is I define on the second page, usually, or the third page at the latest, I define the meaning of a court of record. And a court of record is that which proceeds according to the common law. And the common law is right here. I just read it to you, the supreme law of the land. That's the common law. This is a common law document. When they tell you, you know, they tell us, oh, you can't come into the courts because that Fifth Amendment stuff for, you know, the grand jury, that's for the federal courts. It doesn't apply here. Well, wait a second. The supreme law of the land, the Constitution, the laws of the United States, they shall be the supreme court of the land. And the judges must obey. They're bound to it. What are you talking about? You see, they've been taught in bar school the lie. You teach a lie long enough and people believe it. They truly believe it. I'm like, you know, I'm like coming from planet zero to these people because, you know, they're not hearing. They're not in the reality that I'm in, and they can't hear from this dimension. Because they truly believe, they're true believers, they're the minions of the New World Order, and they have been drilled in their bar law school that the statutes are law, and this is the way it is, and you don't need the Constitution, it's passé, and this explains it, use the statutes, and you're okay. And so that's what they teach them. And they go into, you know, convulsions when you start to bring this stuff into the court. They don't know how to deal with it, and they can't respond to it. They're totally silent. And because
that's powerful. That's,
yes,
that's really. I was just typing in the chat that John Drash is one of my favorite guests. His work to educate folks is very powerful.
I got a question.
Patty Walking Turtle, one of our hosts here. She, Patty Walking Turtle. She's a Native American and a great host here that is really empowering people on Saturday afternoons. She wants to know if you're in Kansas yet with your organization, because she.
Oh yeah,
we're
in every single state. If you go up to our websites and our website and you highlight the states on the top tab, and you click on Kansas, which is KS, and you get to there, you'll see that we are in Kansas. You know, one of the problems in some of the states, and Kansas is one of them, I think, that we don't have a state leader yet, a state coordinator. Once we get a state coordinator in a state, all of a sudden, a month, you look 30 days later, and it just explodes. All of a sudden, you just start to fill up with people. And the reason being is because when a person becomes a state coordinator, then their job, once they take on that responsibility, is to call all the county organizers and start getting meetings online, you know, on over the, you know, the, you know, telephones or Skype
right.
or something. And so then you notify all the other members and to come to the meeting. As soon as you get activity, activity breeds activity. Just get the
right.
people inactive, and next thing you know, there's a buzzing going on, and people are seeing and hearing, and next thing you know, you're starting to build up. People are coming, they're looking,
right.
and then they join, and they get into the buzz, and the buzz is going, and you're all over the place. I mean,
so once,
that's how you move.
I would say, you know, a state coordinator, is that what you call them?
Well, we have county organizers, which are the people organizing the county, and then we have state coordinators, which is coordinating all the organizers to get together and meet and talk and,
right.
and do, you know?
So a state coordinator is like a snowball, and once he gets rolling, it turns into a giant snowball,
oh, yeah.
avalanche.
it just goes crazy, exactly. So we have a few states. We have about 8 or 9 states that are moving kind of slow. Kansas is one of them. Now, they may have picked up a coordinator. I see they got 2 constituted counties already. But they do have a lot of counties. They have 105 counties, so they got a lot of work to do. But again, you know, what I tell people everywhere, if you're one person in one county and you sign up and you want, just get it done. Go out and constitute the common law grand jury in your county. It's a very simple process. It's 35 minutes. You set a meeting that's 35 minutes long. You know, you get up and you speak for 2 minutes. You tell people what we're here for. We're going to watch three short videos. And after the videos, we're going to ask people to vote by showing of their hands what their will is. And then you put the videos on. They're like 9 minutes each, less than 30 minutes. And as soon as they're off, you stand up and you say, okay, everybody here that's in favor of reinstating the common law grand jury here in the county of whatever, okay, raise your hand. It's almost always unanimous. I mean, I've only been in 2 places where people couldn't make their mind up. You always get a person from time to time, they can't make their mind up. But anyway, you know, it's usually unanimous, and then it's a ritual of signing the papers, affidavits that this took place, and then you put the papers aside, and when you're ready to file it with the court and the county clerk, then you file it. But everybody can constitute right away. And once you're constituted, you can get 10, 15, 20 counties together and say, hey, let's go file together, and then you all file on the same day, and it gives them a little zing, you know. And believe me, when the whole state is constituted and filed, and you identify yourself as a unified grand jury, and you list, in our case, New York, all 62 counties, I think that's pretty impressive. We do that with 62 seals do it, and then we have the unified seal.
Let me ask you a question. A lot of people know that the Constitution was kind of a surrender. A lot of people were against it in the South, and a lot of representatives, and that it allowed for a dictatorship to form. Hypothetically, let me ask the question, then you can answer. Let's say we went back to the states because the District of Columbia federal government has far overstepped their bounds. So let's say next year or later this year, we decided to abolish the federal government and go back to our states with a new or a new improved Articles of Confederate States and a new Declaration of Independence. All of this stuff would still apply because it is God's natural law, common law, correct?
Well, the Bill of Rights is what has kept us free, you know, as George puts it. George
well,
Bush
we would
put
keep
it,
that, obviously.
Right. Well,
I'm
that's the Constitution. But let me finish my point here, because this is an extremely important point, because I'm going to write a paper on this. And, you know, look, at George Bush said, oh, that goddamn piece of paper again, you know, and he was talking about the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. Now, I'm studying the Federalist Papers right now. I've never read the Federalist Papers. I've heard quotes out of it, and there's two sets of papers. One's the Federalist Papers, and the other is the Anti-Federalist Papers. The Anti-Federalist Papers is really, you know, those are really the people that really had it in play that they were concerned about the federal government. And when you go through it, you realize that these people were not against the Constitution. They were having a problem with the way the Constitution was being written that was giving the federal government too much power. And they only wanted the federal government to have only enough power to maintain the Union. That's all, nothing more. And the end product did exactly that. I'm convinced of it. I've read through the Constitution very carefully, particularly the power of the legislators and what they can do. And I'm very impressed by it, and I don't really have a problem. I mean, yeah, there may be a few things that could be a problem in there that I haven't picked up on yet because I'm still studying myself. But I'm telling you right now, I am extremely impressed. One of the things that has kept us free is that Constitution. And, you know, our Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, we're talking about the big boys, you know, those nine kings up on the hill. And they've been around since the very beginning, okay? Matter of fact, one of those kings, so to speak, gave a big presentation concerning the power and the authority and the necessity of the jury in 1789, when the Constitution, the ink on the Constitution was still wet. And there was already a movement to get rid of the jury. And one of the biggest arguments or debates, which I've been keen to when I'm listening to these tapes and going back and reading some of the papers, is that this big debate about the jury. And in the jury, you know, they wanted to do this, they wanted to do that, they wanted to put this. And they're talking about things that were going into the Constitution, but it ended up not being in there, thankfully, because what they did is they put it into the Bill of Rights, which now took it out of the authority of the federal government. The federal government has no authority, no state government has any authority over the jury. And they put it into the Bill of Rights, it becomes an unalienable right, it can't be touched, it's sacred. So with that realization is they did the right thing, and a lot of good stuff came out. But I was listening, and I can think on how people who haven't read the Constitution, how they could be confused, because they're reading the Constitution as it was in 1787 when it was written, and four states had already approved it, and it was written that had changed after that. It wasn't until 1789 when they finalized it, and then had it voted on even by the government itself. But they finalized it. And the government was a new government. It wasn't really in place yet. They were delegates. They really would not. It was it wasn't really a government. It was just acting as government. And it wasn't until, of course, George Washington, when he was elected, that now we have the federal government. Now we have a system of laws set up. So the end results, in my humble opinion, is a work of art. And particularly the Bill of Rights, you see, because the Constitution, the body of the Constitution, lays out the three powers, okay? There's legislative power, there's administrative power, and there's judicial power. And they were very, very careful in how they laid that out. And nowhere, in anywhere, those three powers, is there anything that gives them the ability to control our behavior. And that's the key. So the powers they have has nothing to control the behaviors. Then they came in with the Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights made it crystal clear that restricted them. You know, this is what you cannot do. Do not touch this. Do not touch that. So it solidified the body, the Bill of Rights, which is part of the body.
They still didn't listen, and I would like you to repeat where all of this comes from and how you came to do it. They're still not listening because one of the things that it says is Congress shall make no laws regarding religion. It does not say there should be a separation of church and state. What it says is Congress shall make no laws regarding religion. In other words, they're not supposed to be impeding on your right to practice your religion anywhere. Yet they're telling the military they can't pray. They're telling children in school. They're telling you can't have a nativity scene on public property or this, that, or the other thing. And that in itself is another fiction. Because you've got these atheists running around filing lawsuits saying, well, we can't have that. I don't believe in God and blah, 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 blah. And the fact of the matter is that in itself is bull. It's a lie right there because, I mean, if it says you shall make no laws regarding religion or freedom thereof, well, then how can some atheist freak at Christmas time, even though it's not really Jesus' birthday, and we all know that that's a paganistic, right. You know, those of us that have right. gotten deep into this know Christmas and Easter and all that crap is a pagan ritual that has been, you know, that Jesus has been hijacked since the beginning, pretty much. But anyways,
well, that's okay, because the truth is there. Look, at knowledge is power, okay? That's the key. Knowledge is power. Unfortunately, we the people have not really taken the opportunity to really take control of our country, even from the beginning. Our founding fathers set it up, and a group of people, by the time they got to the second and third generation in, they lost it, okay? And the enemy came in and subverted, and they start to de-educate us. And the education we receive today is slave education. They teach us to respond and comply and to be, you know, lazy and to be complacent. And they just, you know, they've controlled our education. So they're not giving us the knowledge we need. We have a great opportunity because it's almost like an awakening. Here we are.
It is
go out to our website. Yes.
It is an awakening.
You go out to our website. Well, there's definitely a spiritual awakening, but there's also a knowledge awakening of our nation, which is connected because it's about justice, and God is justice, and justice is synonymous with virtue, and virtue comes from God. So it is a spiritual awakening in that sense, too. But here it is. Look, we've come for the first time in history where the people have the opportunity, and we are not just in one small place here. We're in all 50 states, and we're going into seven other countries. And we have this opportunity to reset the clock back to 1789, okay, and bring the people into control and educate the people. Once we do this, we will be like we've never been before. Just think, if we are organized in the sense of for the purpose of knowledge, that's what the website is about. It facilitates a place for learning, so it's an educational website, but it also is a facilitator for the purpose of organizing and communicating. And so it's communicating, organizing, and educating. And those are the key things. And if you have this happening in every county, and everybody understands what happens in my county or my state is my business, what happens in your county and your state is your business, but we all have to work under principles and maxims. And if we're all doing that, we're all doing the right thing. We're bringing justice back into the courts, which means we're bringing God back into the courts. We're bringing justice back into the nation, into the government, which means we're bringing God into the nation and the government. And if we come with a bent knee and we get the blessings of God, as is written in the Constitution, that the purpose of government is to protect the blessings of liberty. And that's the key. Liberty doesn't come without the blessing. You can't have it unless God blesses you with it. And that requires a humble position and a bent knee and an acknowledgement of God and the yielding to his will. And when we do that, that's why we talk about God often. And when we do that, then we're in a position where if God blesses us, we're going to have it. And if we come in with knowledge and action and we bring our schools back to a place where it needs to be educational-wise, then we stand a chance of getting it and really embedding it so deep in the hearts and the minds of all Americans and hopefully all people that this is the way it is. It's the common law that's going to take us. So, you know, we have a great opportunity. Never before at this level of focus has really control being considered to be taken. But it's up to the people to stand up. Only the people can save America.
Right. And then once this thing gets rolling, if we basically decided that we would like to become a hemp-bearing nation,
we should become. Hemp has a lot of great qualities.
Now we're talking about 60,000 new products that can be made as well as like say if there were 1,000 new industries, new businesses per each 60,000, we could literally have greenbacks printed on hemp paper backed by industrial hemp being used across the board to make 60,000 products, to make fuel, to make food, to make medicine, to make clothing, and to put the pharmaceutical business out. Because Rick Simpson, you know, and others that talk about hemp oil and the powers of healing from this God-given all-natural plant. I mean, put it this way. This whole fraudulent banking system, fractional reserve, based on petrodollars, which the whole world wants to dump anyways, basically with what you're doing, okay, getting us back to common natural law, and then wide open across the board decriminalization of hemp.
It's not a crime to have an item.
Right.
It's not a crime.
No, but what I'm
saying, even if you want to use that item to get high, that's your business.
Right. Or for medicine or whatever.
Yeah,
but
I mean, that's your business what you do with it.
The point we're making, though, is that, you know, you could even offer people incentives, anybody out there who's got land. Imagine if this country was just loaded with hemp fields and businesses springing up left and right that make products out of hemp, and the Federal Reserve and the debt system being abolished. Within a period of a year or two, there could be such a surplus of wealth it would make people's heads spin. They
Absolutely.
Just need the knowledge that we're talking about. And in the last few minutes, I know you've said this before, but for any new listeners, could you explain how you came upon this jury? We got like, you know, 10 or 15 minutes left.
Right.
A lot of people probably think that maybe you went to law school or studied law.
I'm a nobody like everyone else.
Tell them what you used to do and how you came upon this journey and what it is that made you seek this and why you're not afraid to stand up.
Well, yeah. I rest in the Lord on all these things, and my life has been an opening of doors. And when the doors open, I go through it. And I've I've got a relationship with the Lord, and I've determined in my life to do the best I can in His will. And so I believe I've come to realize that when I tried to get doors open, they wouldn't open in life, so to speak. And then I find a door that was open, not necessarily where I wanted to go, but I would go and just do the will of God as I believed it. But I'm a general contractor. That's where I started off, and construction manager. But I got involved with the movement actually in the 90s when the IRS came out after me, and I've always been able to escape them. And recently I was able to deal with them in the courts. But
you were teaching a study class. You want to mention that really quick?
Right. I've been studying the Bible. I'm a student of the Bible, and I've been preaching the Bible for about 3 years. I mean, for about 30 years now, since I've come to the Lord. And I used to just have Bible studies in people's kitchens and just preaching the Bible. But we did get a ministry going online. And that's where I was, teaching the Bible for 30 years. I was online for, goodness, quite a few years. I'm guessing maybe 15 or so years. We had an international Bible study because it was on a PAL talk. People were coming from all over the world, and we had about five or six Bible teachers with us. And so that was where I was focused. And when the Lord kind of shut that down or started to fall apart for different reasons, someone really wants to get me there. Anyway, for different reasons, I then found myself here. And I realized whatever it is I'm doing, I'm going to do it into the glory of the Lord. And when I started to look at justice particularly, I come to realize that this is the Lord's work, because justice in the Black's Law Dictionary and other legal dictionaries is synonymous with virtue. And virtue comes from one place. You find it in the Bible. It comes from Christ, the hem of Christ. It comes directly from Him. And so if you're going to study justice, you got to study God. You got to study the Christ. You got to study the law, which is the Bible. So that's what I brought into this thing. I realized that this is a spiritual battle. So we talk about the law. We talk about the problems. And we write court cases. And we talk about our founding fathers. And we do quotes. And we use their words and other great men. But it all stems around the Bible. And because the Bible and all of the great men, most of 99.9% of them, very few of them were not in this case, but they went along anyway. But 99+% of the people that brought this nation together were godly people. They were Christians. They were Christ-focused. And you really go back and read their words, they spoke about him often. They spoke about God. They spoke about the Bible and the principles of the Bible. And that's where the law comes from. It's the Mosaic law. And law, as the Lord taught us, the two great commandments, it's written in the hearts of men, you know. And so love God with all thy heart and with all thy soul, and love thy neighbor as thyself for the love of God. And that's the key. You know, we now start off our meetings reading Bible verses. I'd like to read a couple of Bible verses. And Proverbs chapter 2 is one we looked at just recently. And Proverbs 2, maybe about 15 verses, 12 verses. My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart unto understanding. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and lifted up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver and searchest for her as for hidden treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walk uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. When wisdom entereth into thine heart and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall perceive thee. Understand, preserve thee. Understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh forward things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. So, you know, the Bible will guide us, and that's why, you know, I don't think about the consequences of what I'm doing, because I know I'm doing the right thing. And I'm leaving it up to God to deal with my protection and whatever concern is there. I just don't think about it. And you know, I read my Bible every day. And recently, I read through Kings and Samuel. And you're reading about all of the amazing work that God has done to deliver people over and over impossible things. He blinds people. You know, I was just reading about Elisha. Okay, and he's in some city, and some king's coming down to get him, and they surround the city with all of these chariots and everything, and somebody comes running into Elisha, into his house, and says, they're coming to get you, run, hide. He said, don't worry about it, you know. And he prayed God, he opened his eyes, and he looked up into the mountains, and saw they were just filled with chariots and horsemen all around, surrounding them. And then he went out to meet these people, and he prayed the Lord that they would be blinded. So God blinded them from the reality of things, and he came out and says, oh, Elisha's not here, he's in another city. And he brings them to the other city, and they go into the other city, and the king said, you want us to kill all these people? You know, to Elisha, you want us to take them out? And Elisha says, oh, no, feed them. So he feeds them, and they forget all about it, and they go home, and that's it. It's done. I mean, that's how God works. I mean, isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
that's how God
is.
Works. Okay,
well,
he just blinds people.
The story that I really like is when, I believe it's Peter, one of the apostles is in prison, and an angel of light puts all the guards basically to sleep, waltzes right through the prison like several locked gates. The chains come off of him, and he's able to just walk right out of there. Now, you got to know, Herod must have killed those guards for letting him escape. In other words,
they feared for their life, yes.
You know, what are they going to tell Herod? That an angel of light just came in, and they were paralyzed or put to sleep, the prisoner just walked out? You can imagine what would happen today if somebody accused of being a huge terrorist just walked out of a federal prison. There'd be a lot of explaining to do from everybody, right. You know. So, yeah.
Well, amen.
I mean,
God is able, and that's the key, and we need to trust in him, you know. And I'd like to just make one other point before we close down. I see it's coming close, and that is education. That is the key for everybody. You need to become educated. You know, we give out an eighth.
It says, my people will perish for lack of knowledge.
Lack of knowledge.
So
Amen.
It's time to get that knowledge, and we've got the internet, which is basically, if you've got the internet, then you've got the whole world's library and access to everything out there. Even
that's right,
stuff
and we've,
you
and,
have
we've
access
put,
to.
And we've put the curriculum together for you for this. You could go out to learn what every American, every human being should learn these things. But, you know, we give out an eighth grade test when we go out and have, you know, a presentation on something. We always pass out the eighth grade test from 1895, Kansas. It's a Kansas test. And that eighth grade test is not passable by your normal college graduate. They just can't pass those tests. And that's what they taught in the eighth grade. We've come to realize we don't have a real education. What we're doing is we're being indoctrinated by school. If they brought you to a real education and focused, you only need 8 years and you're done. Unless you're going to become a doctor or an engineer or something, then you have further education. But 8 years is general, and that's equivalent to beyond our college education today. And so this is where we have to bring things back. We have to get our children educated. We have to bring a proper education. And we ourselves need to be educated. And at least if 5 or 10% of us do that, then it's the 5%, 10% that controls things anyway. And we'll get our children so we can bring them as close as we can to 100% of real education. We'll never hit 100% of anything. But, of course, you strive for the highest goal and you take what you can get. So education is the absolute key, and that's what people have to realize that. Education and a bent knee, then the more and more knowledge you accumulate, if it's true knowledge, you'll find God, and you'll realize that you have to be humbled before Him and pray for His wisdom and understanding and for Him to bless you with the blessings of liberty and whatever is in His will to do, and you always have to pray in His will. So if we do those two things, focusing in on the Lord and becoming educated, we will succeed and no matter what.
For sure. For sure. And a lot of people in this world through their journey have to go through that, the trials and that period of anguish, sometimes hit completely rock bottom before they can be built back up correctly. Because, you know, the world and the devil, Satan, has a way of knocking people down and leading them down the wrong path. And it's amazing to me how many people that were dead or near death or had amazing amounts of heartaches and problems or were in prison and completely turn their life around when they seek God and He blesses them and they seek wisdom and seek the truth. It just turns people around, and to me that's one of the greatest things. Annie, did you want to say something?
No, I disagree with everything that you said.
She's being
sarcastic.
Let me
say one more thing of encouragement when it comes to education.
What do you mean, no, you're not?
I'm not disagreeing with you, and I'm not being sarcastic.
Oh, I thought you said I disagree with
everything. No, I said I agree with everything you say.
Open up
your ears.
All right.
Anyway, I'd like to say one more thing about education. This is extremely important. Again,
yeah, we're down to like the last 60 seconds.
People have been beat up to think that they can't
stream,
do.
The stream tends to roll a few minutes behind, so I just didn't want you to get cut off. And
right,
our guest, by the way, is for survival tomorrow. Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy's medical survival training. Go ahead.
Yeah, people need to realize, again, everything is really, you're just going to pick it up as a child picks things up. Just put yourself under the tapes. I promise you, just listen to the tapes, watch the videos, watch them and listen to them a couple of times, and I promise you, you will pick this up. As osmosis, it'll just come into you, just like a baby, just like anything else in life. And the next thing you know, it'll be rolling off your tongue, and you'll wonder, where the heck did that come from? So it doesn't get difficult. This is not difficult stuff. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you so much for being with us again, and we look forward to having you back in a few more weeks after, you know, to report some of your progress and everything. And
I appreciate
you're one of my favorite guests. you are leading by example, and that's what we all need to do. We need to be strong in the faith. And it's a constant battle, because one day I'm feeling like, wow, are we really making a difference? And then the next day I'm totally empowered again. And, you know, the devil wants to creep into your mind and make you like you're not powerful, but we are. So with that, we're going to do our lead out now. Thank you so much, John and Gerard. Thank you.
Godspeed, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you to Steve, Granada Steve, and Paula, and all the awesome people at the network, all of our cool fans and
main
friends
out in Radio Land.
All the cool friends in chat and the cool friends listening. We are one. From one came many, and the many are one. We'll see you tomorrow.
God bless. See you tomorrow.
Bombadida, bombadida, bombadida,
bombadida.
Thanks, John.
Bombadida, 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 bombadida. About the clouds when we're together, just sing a song and think about sunny weather.
Happy trails to you till we meet.